Welcome to Mobility Now, the podcast that looks at mobility technology sitting at the edge of today, but the center of tomorrow. I'm your host, Amit Mehta, head of innovation at Silicon Valley Labs, an advanced research division of North American Lighting, a subsidiary of the Koito Group, the world's leading tier one supplier of exterior automotive lighting.
And I'm your co-host, Dan Davies, innovation manager at Silicon Valley Labs. Autonomous vehicles and other mobility technologies have the potential to reduce road fatalities, reduce congestion, and change the way we experience traveling. Mobility Now interviews key players from startups and industry leaders developing these mobility technologies.
Mobility Now is for people new to the industry, students wanting to enter the industry, and others in the industry that would like to keep up on trends surrounding mobility. Dan, how are you doing?
Very good. Thanks, Amit.
Good. It's been a whole month since we've got together. So, and I like to pick on you for living in San Francisco.
Yeah,
and I finally hear that San Francisco will allow indoor dining starting November 3rd with up to 50% seating capacity. Do you plan on going to any of these restaurants, or are you still
Yeah, I've been actually. Couple of weeks ago, I went out to Scoma's. You ever been there? It's the seafood restaurant out on the wharf.
No, I've never been there.
Very good seafood restaurant. They've been closed for a long time. They opened up to 25%. So you basically get your own private room. It's a private dining room for each table.
Ooh.
So it was kind of a nice experience, also a little eerie. But yeah, I do hear they're going up to 50% starting next week. So we'll see how that goes.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, but still, as far as work goes, I've been working from home pretty much every day still. You're going to the office, right?
Yeah, I've been to the office.
Yeah. How's it been? Do you think working from home has changed your productivity level at all?
That's a good question. So when I originally started, I thought working from home was a terrible idea because we were just not able to communicate with each other enough to support innovation. As you know, we're part of the innovation team, so we're looking at ways to communicate and increase innovation. And when you're not face-to-face, it's very difficult to make that combustion happen.
Right.
But as we moved on, I think there are pros and cons to it. Our communication has not suffered, and we're very active. At least this department. And one of the good things is that we started a Sunnyvale Sensor Fusion meetup, as you know, because you're part of.
Right.
And what's happened we've brought it onto an online space, and our reach has went globally. So now we're getting members that come from Italy, from India, from China, that we would have never gotten before. So I think moving forward, we'll always be in this hybrid model.
That's a really great. So the Sensor Fusion meetup has gone global. It's really good to see. I think membership has really increased over the last couple of months as well. So it's really, this crisis has changed the way we work, definitely in innovation. As far as missing the face-to-face communication, we've also taken in some other tools. We've taken in Microsoft Teams. I think we use that a lot more now than we used to.
Yeah.
And just the utilization of different chat apps. We use Line, we use chats or phone calls. This has really been a big change. And, I was thinking our guest today knows a lot about that. He's been through the Lehman shock of 2008. So this new business crisis is nothing new. It's something he's dealt with before. I'd like to welcome the Senior Vice President of North American Lighting, Kishore Ahuja. Thank you for joining us today, Kishore.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. And congratulations on starting your podcast. Mobility technology is it's an important subject, and I'm honored to be here.
Thanks. Great to have you. So I wanted to ask you, it's 7 months into the pandemic now. We've seen a lot of changes in the way that we work and interact with each other. Have these changes impacted our productivity?
Look, NAL is a manufacturing company, and 80% of our people work in the plants and rest in the offices. And as you know, our plants shut down like the rest of the auto industry for a long 2 months, and it was a crazy time. You know, the pandemic struck us a blow. It sent us scrambling, and we didn't know when we were returning, but we did know this, that the safety of our employees was non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. So we had a large team of people under the guidance of our president, Kirk Gadberry, We all worked on a playbook for a safe return, and like everyone else, we were ready with social distancing and masks and health checks, the whole nine yards.
Yes.
And I'm proud to tell you that judging by the results, we had a successful return. And I must tell you, I've become a firm believer in the efficacy of the masks. Now, that being said, office work, that couldn't stop. It was on a timeline. We had all these projects lined up and people in our different office locations, whether it's product development or launch, sales, purchasing. Everyone was busy reacting to things, discussing with the customers. And all this work is really highly interactive. And we've always done it on site, and we didn't have any experience with remote work. So this was a challenge. It was different for us.
Mm-hmm.
And, at a moment's notice, we had a gun to our head, and we had to send employees packing home for their safety. We did have these remote working tools, as you said. We deployed them, and we prayed that it works. And, lo and behold, it did. The virtual methods, I have to say, they were quite successful. But not just because of the tools. I think because of the personal efforts of all the people. I saw a sense of collective responsibility. I saw dedication. People just wanted to make it work. And I think we were all very pleased with the outcome.
Wow, that's good news. And I'm very interested to hear your perspective on being in the middle of America. We're hearing perspectives from Jamie Dimon, who's the CEO of Chase, and members of Chase that have commented that innovation or creative combustion and learning opportunities for younger employees have taken a big hit when you work from home. But then you have these tech companies on the West Coast who are saying, work from home's great, such as Google and Twitter, and we can use this permanently. So my question to you is, being in the Midwest and being in manufacturing, do you think remote working will become widespread in the future?
Well, as a general trend, Amit, yes. I believe that remote work got an undeniable boost because people were forced to try it out. And, they came out with some real benefits, like, you eliminate some long commutes, you save on office space if you want to. So I think many people are going to move to remote working much more so than before. But then let me speak for NAL in particular. We did have a paradigm shift. It does work. It's a good enough solution. But in my humble opinion, it's still not the best solution. Again, I'd emphasize, we are a manufacturing business. We are wired for on-site work, and each of us, in some manner, is working to support that person on the shop floor making that product. But then, secondly, I personally believe that on-site work allows for many things. It allows for face-to-face interaction, and I'm a fan of that. It facilitates better communication. You can catch a nuance here. You can have an impromptu conversation there. I think we can resolve issues quicker, make faster decisions. And then there are things like onboarding and training people, managers having to maybe look at 10 different employees and figure out who needs help where. You can visualize the status of complex projects better on a wall in a war room. So I think that on-site work has a lot of benefits. At the same time, we are a company with so many locations, and this remote working, it's not just remote working from home. It's remote working with different locations. And we've learned a bunch of tools where we can actually communicate, collaborate better because of this experience. So, you know, I envision going back to on-site work, you know, whenever the COVID era ends. But certainly we'll be using a hybrid model with some remote work in the mix.
Yeah, sounds good. I'm definitely looking forward to getting back to the office. You mentioned some of the face-to-face communication. I miss that. That was a lot of fun, talking to Ahmed every day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one thing that's missing from
the team. I'm hoping to come see you guys there in Silicon Valley sooner rather than later, face-to-face.
Really great. So Kishore, I'd like to focus a little bit on you now. So you moved previously from an OEM to a tier one, and then you spent over 25 years with the Koito Group. Can you tell us a little bit about your career journey?
Well, I'm fortunate, exposed to many opportunities, many work cultures. I built my foundation as an engineer at Toyota in India. Then I took the chance and moved to America. You know, felt so good to come here, and you know, came straight to Detroit and worked for Chrysler. I was a product development engineer there, enjoying it. But I was dealing with products, you know, grills or you know, lamps, which were built by suppliers, and you know, I just felt that all the action was on the supplier side. They were designing the product. I just had this curiosity about how they ran their business. I just wanted to be close to the real action and make a real contribution. So, you know, I took a leap of faith and moved to a small supplier that I thought had a big potential. And soon I was asking myself, God, what did I do? You know, I had totally failed in my due diligence, and it just was a bad supplier. And you learn a lot about what not to do in these situations. Yeah. And then I moved to Wagner Lighting as a program manager, thoroughly enjoyed the full control of my project end to end. You know, it was technically, commercially, the whole enchilada. And then, you know, my good friend, Deval Desai, you know, he was at NAL. He lured me to speak with the company, and I found home. You know, NAL has this great combination of the Japanese mindset and, you know, which is long-term thinking, striving for perfection, and the American spirit. You know, people are bubbling with confidence, just the get it done mentality. And you know, it's wonderful. I got a chance to work in many areas here. Spent a long time in product development, in program management, and then lately for several years in manufacturing and purchasing. So you know, it's been a great journey here. I've seen the company grow more than tenfold while I've been here, and it's been great to assist the company in that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's an incredible journey, and it's interesting to see how you've evolved in this time. But one question that strikes me is, if I was entering this company, is does it bother you that unlike a major OEM, North American Lighting didn't have a diverse product portfolio of vehicles and basically had been stagnant in a position just selling halogen lamps for over 80 years?
Yeah, well, maybe I was young and naive, but no, I wasn't bothered. You know, actually, I saw Koito as a global leader and NAL as having a huge potential in North America. And, you know, lighting is an exciting product. It's stylized, it's highly engineered. And NAL also offered me a window into the development styles and workings of several different OEM customers, Japanese, US, Europeans. And I was just a geek and enjoyed that kind of stuff.
Very cool. I really love the story, Kishore. You kind of took the leap of faith, stumbled a little bit at first, but then found your home. Tenfold growth. That is amazing. That really struck me. What do you think caused that huge growth at NAL during your time there?
Well, I think the underlying trend is that you know, we leveraged Koito's strengths in product technology, the Koito production system. We were able to offer a better, higher quality product. And, you know, we were also able to leverage Koito's strong relationships with their customers. You know, they localized their manufacturing, they grew in the U.S., and, you know, we grew along with them. And then came the dramatic growth, you know, as a result of LEDs, you know, the massive disruption that LEDs brought to the lighting industry. You know, back in 2007, it was Koito introduced the world's first LED headlamp. In 6 short years, you know, NAL was making LED headlamps and mass producing them for, you know, Toyota Corolla and the Acura MDX. And, you know, And, you know, soon the stylists found wonderful ways to use these LEDs for signature lighting, for brand recognition. The rest is history. And, you know, accordingly, our sales grew multifold as we transitioned to LED. There were these were more complex lamps. You know, instead of 30 parts now, a lamp had 200 parts. You know,
wow.
A highly stylized product with a base of electronics now, driver modules, precision optics. And as such, you know, our manufacturing was getting transformed. So that's a little snapshot of our rapid growth.
Wow.
Cool.
That's incredible growth. And I'm going to ask a little, maybe a little convoluted question here, but I would like to get your opinion and your views on the business aspect of it. So you stated in 2007 was the world's first LED headlamp. And I think it's very fortunate that everything along the C-swap, meaning cost, weight, size, and performance, aligned for LEDs. So LEDs basically were able to overcome all of those hurdles and eventually reach a cost target that now you're seeing on a Prius or a Corolla as a standard. But one of my questions I have is, if you look at, for example, laser headlamps, which appeared around circa 2015 and have only been adopted by 2 vehicles, it seems like a big risk when you're adopting new technology. So my question to you, from a business point of view, how did you make that decision thinking, okay, LEDs are what we're going to invest in? I'm imagining it's a huge CapEx project and it's the future and this is the way we should go.
That's a great question. Let me try to answer it this way. LEDs, like electronics, follow a pattern similar to Moore's law, you know, with their output doubling every couple of years and the costs fall accordingly. So in 2007 or at any point, you can predict what might be coming in the next generation or two of the product. And, you know, that aligns well with the automotive product cycles, which are usually 4 to 5 years long. So you do have to keep investing a tremendous amount in R&D, I think, in the lighting companies. You know, you invest in LEDs, you invest in laser, all kinds of R&D. But then I think within a few years, you start to get a glimpse of what can work. You collaborate with the OEMs. And, you know, if you do that well, you understand what's going to happen in the next few years. And you invest accordingly, you invest intelligently, and you get rewarded. And you can leverage the trend like we did over the last decade. And that's what led to a massive adoption rate. And we tripled sales in, you know, a short 6 or 7 years, all through organic growth. We were building and expanding plants.
Really great. And the adoption, I want to ask a little bit about the customer responsive LED headlamps. So you're selling halogen headlights for 80 years, and then suddenly you have this new technology that hasn't been tried and proven yet. Is it something that customers really wanted, or did NAL have to make a strong sales and marketing push for those products?
Well, initially, no, way up front, the 2007, that's a lot of close collaboration with the customers. There is some technical marketing involved. There's a lot of R&D involved. But I think later on, it became clear that the dramatic styling benefits and the greatly improved lighting performance, that just made LED lamps so attractive that the OEM customers clearly were ready to migrate to these lamps. The inflection point was there. So, you know, at that stage here in the U.S., we really didn't need marketing. Rather, we just needed flawless execution all the way from design to launch to manufacturing to supply chain management. And you know, fortunately, we had a solid leadership team, an employee base that was ready to learn and adapt. And, you know, we were successful in digesting this this disruption.
Wow, that's quite interesting as well. And I think we're going to move on to the future. So what's next for NAL?
Well, what's next for lamps, I guess, is what's next for NAL. I think the lamps will continue to transform. The only difference in the future is that it's, I guess, more accelerated. I think the lamps will get smarter. They'll get safer. They'll consume less power. They'll start to utilize newer light sources like lasers and OLEDs. And absolutely, they'll have expanded opportunities for styling and branding, especially, you know, as electrification takes hold even more. You know, you really don't need the grills. And then the fun really starts when you start to include sensors like LiDARs and cameras in lamps so they can support ADAS and autonomous driving. I think essentially the lamps will follow and support the ACES trend, which is a multi-decade evolution, but sure to happen.
Very cool. So ACES is autonomous, connected, electric, and shared mobility. A common topic in the mobility world. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, the trend is sure to happen. You know, you said earlier, Dan, in the introduction, it has benefits with respect to safety, emissions, the overall cost structure goes down. You know, people enjoy a more connected and enabled lifestyle, and our lamps will transform to support these trends as they take hold. You know, they'll keep getting more complex all the way till maybe level 5 autonomy takes hold en masse. You know, I don't know how far out that is, maybe 30 years or so.
Okay.
You know, when the primary function of the lamp changes from seeing on the road to the vehicle having to be seen. The only question is the speed, you know, whether it's going to happen in 30 years or 50 years or maybe you'll be sitting out there 10 years later saying how slow my timeline was.
Very interesting. So headlights will go from this primary illumination function to help the driver see to now how can the car be seen by other vehicles and what other functions can we put in that headlight. I think that's really the most interesting point for NAL and the industry going forward. You mentioned a bit about ADAS functions. Can we talk a little bit about what kinds of features can be supported by the headlight in terms of ADAS? What can these sensors do for the headlight?
Yeah, absolutely. But before that, let me talk a little bit about adaptive driving. You know, it's a current technology. It's here. It makes night vision dramatically better, you know, enabling a full view of the road with no glare. And that's really the holy grail for lighting. And, you know, I really hope that the U.S. regulators approve ADB soon so consumers can start benefiting from it. And then I see the ADB get even smarter. You know, again, this technology is already there. Light sources with millions of pixels becoming commonplace, dynamically controlled in real time. So I think that's a huge thing for us over the next many decades. And I think it'll lead to fewer fatalities on the road as a result. So I really look forward to ADB taking hold and saving lives. But back to your question, you know, you talked about sensors. I think we can put these sensors in the four corners excellent place for visibility all around the mm-hmm. car. They'll be aided by all the high power chips and artificial intelligence to be able to detect and recognize people and objects on the road. And the really nice thing is not just at night, but even during bad weather, in rain, in fog, in snow, it'll aid the driver as well as the car's ADAS system. And with connected cars, the possibilities are only beginning to be conceived. I really think that lighting is entering another exciting decade, one that promises to be more dramatic than the transformation of the last one.
Well, I'm very excited to see how lighting will advance. And I want to touch on something you said earlier, though. You said EVs may not need grills, and NAL is moving into sensors and AI. So my question is, does this mean the boundaries on a vehicle are getting blurred? And will this cause any disruption in the supply chain and ecosystem in the lighting business?
Absolutely. I think in the long run, there will definitely be winners and losers. There is a lot to be gained from all the new hardware and software that's going to be needed to support ADAS and autonomous driving. And those that can harness the new technology, those that can leverage fruitful partnerships, and importantly, those who can do this cost effectively will absolutely gain new revenue streams from sensors and software, and those that can't will become less relevant. One thing's for sure, though, the lighting companies that survive the next decade will see electronic hardware and software become a core competency.
I'm looking forward to NAL leading that push, especially towards new revenue. You said something that really interests me, gaining new revenue from the sensors that we have in the headlights. A lot of the industry talks about mobility as a service these days. They call it MaaS. This is kind of a new opportunity where there's different business models. Uber's kind of a good example of that, where there's a different way to make money other than just the traditional hardware sales that's been dominant for a long time. How do you think the Koito Group can engage as this whole automotive world transitions towards MaaS?
That's so different from what we do today, right? We just sell our lamps, and this new model is so dramatically different. It's tough to get your thoughts around it. The new business models really are far from clear. And, companies, governments, they are exploring these ideas. Toyota has a vision for a mobility ecosystem in the future. And I think Koito has some opportunities from that standpoint. And in a way, it's quite well positioned in Japan, because there we supply 30% of traffic signals and streetlights. And you can imagine the possibilities. We could participate in more sophisticated traffic management systems or outfit lampposts with sensors for a variety of applications. And all this will potentially present some opportunities to change the model from selling hardware to selling services and data. You look at the automotive side, we sell lamps today, and who knows, the headlight of the future, it may see some action on the road, maybe somebody putting cones along the road for construction, and that data is picked up and sent to the GPS provider for a fee, or you identify a pothole on the road and send a message to the municipality. So, there are many examples. The roadmap for mobility as a service, I think, is really muddy. It'll take a long time to emerge, but we just need to stay on it and keep exploring.
Well, Dan, I think we've extracted enough information from Kishore about business and technology. So let's move on to culture. You talked about how you had a robust team that could deal with challenges and crises. Question is, how will NAL's culture and strategy have to evolve from today to support your roadmap vision as lighting evolves?
Well, as a tier one supplier, we are recognized for delivering quality, value, customer satisfaction. And I believe you can achieve this only when each one of us wants to delight the customer. And the only way that all employees are aligned in that manner is you create an environment that values your employees. And, you know, again, we are a manufacturing business. And the way we do that, the way we value our employees, we establish the foundation, you know, and that foundation for us is respect and safety for each employee. On that, you build other things like our quality mindset, zero defect mindset. And, you know, we just have to continue to strengthen that so that all our employees, the whole company, whether it's people that are designing or selling or buying or doing whatever, are working in the same direction. And as far as strategy is concerned, the future products will require an open-mindedness, I think, and maybe even a certain degree of risk-taking. You know, risk means a product might not be a physical product in the future. Maybe it's software. Maybe it is a service, MaaS, as you said. Mm-hmm. We just need to examine the different and new business models, keep an open mind, and keep looking at them, of course, jointly with Koito Japan. I think strategies will emerge. As I said before, to be a winner, you have to be able to take a good look and make the right decisions on them.
Great. I really like what you said, having a solid foundation on protecting employee safety and well-being. On top of that, we have zero defect and quality. So I joined NAL almost 3 years ago now, and I noticed those values right away. It's something that's really ingrained across the company, even in the remote Silicon Valley location that I was at. I think employees are genuinely interested in the success of NAL and take pride in the company and the product. And from my perspective, it's really a great place to work because of that, and also because of the learning opportunities just from the engagement with cross-functional teams. And there's a lot of people with different professional backgrounds. But from your leadership perspective, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit. Go ahead and give a plug for NAL. Why is NAL such a great place to work?
Well, a company is headed towards excellence if it has good people, good products, and a good purpose. And if it's continually striving to improve upon all these three. You know, I think we at NAL are aware of this, and we do strive for continuous improvement. You know, we are innovation focused. We are looking to the future. We've engaged with startups in the mobility space. I think NAL is not only a good company to work for, but also a good company to work with.
I think that's well said. And that you've engaged with different startups. My question would be, what would you say to a startup looking to partner with Koito or NAL?
Well, we have an interest in autonomous driving, in mobility ecosystems, in smart cities, in the smart factory. Come work with us. You know, we are serious about being a key player in the future of mobility. We are already partnering with several startups and looking for more. And to show our commitment, we have invested in excellent teams at our Silicon Valley lab. You know, you guys and the rest of the team, and in our Farmington Hills, Michigan Tech Center. You know, you guys work hand in hand with the mobility and R&D experts in Japan. So startups, you know, if they have great ideas or products that align with us, let's collaborate to bring them to fruition.
Great. I think that's really exciting. So I like your comment, Kishore. It's a great company to work for, and it's a great company to work with. So to somebody who's aspiring to enter the automotive world and maybe working with or for NAL, what advice would you have?
Well, the auto space has so much going for it. It's going through some dramatic changes after its first 100 years of existence. For the first time, the automotive and tech giants are converging on this space. So if you are young and hardworking, you know, I think the automotive industry has tremendous opportunities. You know, look at the ACES trend, look at the electrification that is starting at this point in time.
Right.
But in terms of advice, first, as my wife says, you know, be a lifelong learner. Actually, do things that I haven't done. Let me just put it that way. You know, growing up in school or college, you know, we had few resources, even at IIT Delhi. But today, the information age has so much to offer. You can get inspired by the best of leaders. You can learn from the greatest of experts and whatever you're passionate about. You know, take it all in. Find mentors. You know, find them in your company. Find them in your industry. Again, something that I didn't do very well. So, you know, learn from my mistakes and also learn to communicate effectively. You know, end of the day, you'll create a vision for yourself, for your family, for your organization. Now, how you share that vision, how you rally others around you is a skill unto itself. I'm still learning. It's a lifelong journey. So that's the first piece of advice. Mm-hmm. The second is, you have to figure out what makes you really happy. For me, it's going to bed every night knowing that I did the right thing. I did the best I could do. You know, it's having integrity, having fairness, having transparency. And as Ajay Banga of MasterCard says, it's not enough to have IQ and EQ. You need DQ, which is the decency quotient. You know, the rewards will come in due course. Just believe in serendipity.
Wonderful. Great advice for newcomers. I think it's great advice for everyone. Something great. I'm going to take to heart for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, this has really been a great talk, Kishore. I think I really appreciate you sharing your experiences and all of your knowledge with us. I learned a lot. Thanks so much.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much for being here today. And I thank to everybody else who's listening and absorbing this information. I think it'd be very beneficial for them. So tune in next time where we will have Sam Abdulsmed, Principal Research Analyst at Guidehouse Insights, formerly Navigant Research, talk about mobility and his life experience. Thanks again.